Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now it's that time of the week again, time for the Friday gathering. I'm joined in studio by Brenda Power, Irish Daily Mail and Sunday Times columnist, Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan, and from our Galway studio by Hildegard Nocton, Minister of State at the Department of Transport, Tourism and Sport. Minister, can we talk to you first about hotel quarantine, mandatory quarantine? Are you happy with the way the system is working?
Yes, I think it's an important part of dealing with variants of concern from other countries. It's, you know, a logistically, you know, difficult process, but I think it is working well, and we will be seeing an increase of countries over the coming weeks being added to that, and we'll be advised by NPHET and in relation to that. So it's really one part of our approach to ensuring that we manage the virus and particularly variants of concern.
And
there's also the community aspect of that as well. It's only one aspect.
Has it been the cause of as much disagreement within the cabinet as has been reported in the newspapers?
No, absolutely not. I think the issue there was that there was a number of countries leaked out before government departments and ministers had the opportunity to consult, which is obviously the important factor here before any decision has been made. And Cabinet will be meeting next week in relation to that. But as part of that process, when any countries are being added or proposed to be added to the list of countries where passengers will have to go into mandatory quarantine, there has to be that robust engagement between the different government departments to ensure that you know, we're prepared and that every aspect of this is carefully considered.
The suspicion was, though, that it was a scheme that was forced on the government by public opinion because people wanted to see us doing something similar to what New Zealand had done, but that in government you didn't really have the courage of your convictions to go far enough and to quarantine everybody from every country coming into the country.
That's not correct. And just in relation to quarantining every passenger who comes into the country, I don't think that's the correct approach. What we want to do is target countries where there's higher risk, where there are identified variants of concern. And that advice is given by the National Immunisation Advisory Council and NPHET. We have acted very fast. Even before the new year, at Christmas, we brought in a ban on passengers coming from the UK within 24 hours of hearing about the UK variant. So we've made very difficult decisions very quickly. And this is an evolving process, and it will over the next few weeks.
How long ago is it since we first heard about the Breton variant, though? And France still isn't required to quarantine.
Again, we are taking advice from NPHET. There is a group that is looking at variants of concerns in other countries, and that's who we are guided by, and that is what government is doing, what Cabinet will be doing next week in relation to that. And we have always responded to health advice, and things move very fast, and difficult decisions are made very quickly, but we have to ensure that the proper consultation is in place and that we're prepared for the rollout of those decisions.
Matt Carthy.
It was last May when NPHET first suggested that government put in place a system to address the threat of international travel. So to suggest, or for any representative of government to suggest that government have acted quickly on this, I have to say, is laughable. We need to have in place measures that ensure that new variants don't come into the state. So Hildegard talks about measures in December in response to the British variation. The British variation actually was first identified in September. It took a while for it to actually be classified. But the difficulty is that new variations can emerge from anywhere at any time. And unless you have a comprehensive policy and system in place to address all international travel, well, then you're always going to be at the risk of allowing new variants to come into the country. And that creates the challenges that we've seen.
The minister makes a good point, though, doesn't she? Because there is no point in completely cutting ourselves off from the outside world. to deal with a threat that only represents less than 1% of the spread or the cause of the virus in this country?
Well, no, actually, almost. I can't recall the most immediate figures. At one point, it was over 80% of cases that were being tested positive for in this state were actually as a result of the international variants and the new variants that have emerged. So at one point or another, they all stemmed from international travel. But the point is this, Fergal, and this is an important point. Right across this state, there are still families, still workers, there are still communities whose lives have actually been curtailed to be basically imprisoned within their own homes and their own communities. It is nonsensical to suggest, as we have been for the past 4 months, to tell people that they can't move beyond 5 kilometres of their home, whereas at the same time, people can travel from anywhere in the world almost, arrive in Dublin Airport and travel to anywhere else in the country. That is nonsensical. So we have known from the very outset that if we want to really tackle the coronavirus, there are some things beyond government control. It's down to personal behaviour. We accept that. But there are some things that only government can tackle. International travel is one. Putting in place an adequate testing and tracing regime is another. And the monitoring and enforcement of regulations in relation to those sectors that are particularly dangerous, such as the meat processing sector and others. On all three counts, the government have always been too slow and have not been adequate in terms of putting in place the resources and the energy and the ambition that's required in order to let everybody else get on with their daily business.
Brenda Power, B. Solomon, who's right here? Matt or Hildegard?
Well, you see, I mean, it is a blunt instrument, no question about it. But at the same time, when you look at what Australia did at the very outset, and as you say, New Zealand, a blanket ban on all travellers, you know, not a ban, a quarantine imposed on all travellers. And you know, we saw the figures today. I think 10 of those quarantining have tested positive for COVID. So otherwise, without this measure, you know, whatever you say about the numbers and whatever you say about the risk from different countries, those 10 people would have been merrily travelling around the country, unwittingly spreading the virus. So, I mean, there is no question, though, you're quite right, Philip, I think that the government's heart is not in this. And there has, I know Hildegard poo-pooed there, but there definitely has been rancour in cabinet.
Well, can I suggest one reason that the government's heart might not be in it is that there's now an accepted wisdom in economic circles that it was actually multinational corporations and foreign direct investment, not austerity, that got us out of the last recession. And it's going to be the same sector that gets us out of whatever is coming economically. So let's not curtail their ability to do business.
Well,
right,
of course,
now
that makes sense. But you know, that is predicated on us coming out of this. And the first step to doing that is somehow, you know, containing the virus. And as I say, Australia is now pretty much back to normal. Yes, it was a blunt instrument. Yes, it was extremely draconian. People had to spend, again, 2 weeks in hotels and cough up $2,000 or whatever. But it worked. So, you know, it does seem to me to be an all or nothing requirement. And you can completely understand the economic arguments, but it's all or nothing.
Hildegard Nocton, would that be the case, that this policy has been formed with an eye to the needs and the requirements of the multinational sector?
Front and foremost, most of government's decisions have always been public health. And we have, and I've given examples of that in relation to how fast we acted in relation to passengers coming from the UK. One of our biggest, I suppose, our international connectivity is with the UK. And yes, the economy, business, tourism is absolutely critical. But if we want to save those sectors, we have to ensure that we protect the public in relation to health. And international travel is a small part of that, but an important part. And it's really important to say as well that all passengers, no matter where they're coming from, have to present a negative PCR test before they can enter here. They have to quarantine at home, and the Gardaí are enforcing that. We have the mandatory hotel quarantine in place now. We will be adding more countries to it. It is not true to say that government are reluctant. I'm not saying that we're doing this, we're doing this, I suppose, in the knowledge that these are very difficult decisions, that they will have an impact, and they are having an impact in relation to the economy. But we have to ensure that we have public health in place, that we contain this virus. And we are not like Australia or New Zealand, and there is constant comparison in relation to New Zealand. We have an open border. We are not in that position, and we are working really hard in relation to containing those variants of concern. And that's what government actively working together, collaboratively with the Attorney General, also ensuring that we are protecting people's civil liberties.
We're not.
And also rolling out, for example, our walk-in test centres right across the country,
because
the community transition is the biggest
We're moving on. Matt Carthy, sorry, well, we're not moving on. You're moving on. I want to stick with Matt Carthy back in here. We're not New Zealand. We're members of the EU. We just can't do what they've done.
No, we can do what is required to be done for Ireland. And nobody is suggesting that all of this is easy. But every measure that Hildegard has referenced there, including the need for pre-test, post-test, the need for even domestic quarantine, which I think we all know by and large isn't being adhered to universally, all of those measures were far too late in being brought about. They came months after it was first suggested that this was required. I think what we need is robust robust measures to be put in place in a speedy and timely measure, because I've mentioned this before. You know, we were at a point within this country where we were almost at zero COVID, where the cases were down to virtually zero a day, one or two cases a week. We were at that point. The only reason we came out of that point is because variations of the virus came from abroad,
and we didn't
put in place the measures that were required. So we need to make sure that we don't repeat that mistake as the vaccination program is rolled out and as the cases begin to dwindle.
I promise that we will move on from COVID. We will find other things to talk about before the end of the program. But I want to talk, Minister, about AstraZeneca. Are you confident that you can explain to people under the age of 30 why it is that their counterparts north of the border are not going to be getting the AstraZeneca vaccine, but when their turn comes down here in the south, that the under 30s will be?
So, as you know, the NIAC are meeting again today. The European Medicines Agency have come out this week stating that AstraZeneca, the benefits of that far outweigh the risks. And I know that the National Immunisation Advisory Council here have noted the MA's considerations, and they're also meeting again today. And it's important to say that, you know, NIAC are constantly monitoring this. We're watching what's happening, of course, with the EMA, and they will be, if there is to be a change in advice, there will be. But right now...
I know, but whatever about the clinical advice, Minister, the messaging is going to be really important here for people to continue to have confidence in the vaccine programme. Would it not just be simpler and much clearer to say, do you know what, let's just move in step with Northern Ireland, with the United Kingdom on this occasion?
Well, I think NIAC, I think in order for people to have confidence in it, I think it's important that people have all the facts. And NIAC are very clear and very open in relation to issues and the reporting system around the effectiveness of all our vaccines. And I think that's what inspires confidence in the system and in the vaccination process. And I think it's important that we, reiterate that. But we will be, a government will be responding from the best scientific advice. And that is what NIAC are looking at. And they are constantly watching, monitoring this, talking to their peers internationally, and we can be assured, and I would have great confidence, they are being conservative. And we heard Dr. Ronan Lynn yesterday at the press conference that is their job and NPHET's job to be conservative, to ensure that we're given the best advice, and that if anyone has any concerns in relation after receiving any of the vaccines, that they will consult their GP, and that these issues are constantly monitored.
I mean, this is a difficult one, Philip. Obviously, with any powerful medication, whether it's a vaccine or the contraceptive pill, there's always going to be a risk of side effects. And what's unfortunate about this is I don't believe...
I don't think we should compare the contraceptive pill, because the risk of thrombosis there is something that can actually be predetermined in advance.
What I'm saying is
we
do accept that with any effective life-altering medication like that, that you are going to have the risk, however tiny, of a side effect. What I'm afraid of is that this will fuel, obviously, the anti-vax campaign. I'm not convinced, to be honest, that anybody who was up for the vaccination and who was prepared to take whatever possible risks might arise will reject this one on the basis that they'll hang on for a better deal if the Johnson & Johnson one arrives, or if Moderna or Pfizer becomes more available. But I mean, it is worrying when you hear of I think there was a case in Dublin, was it yesterday?
Well, we still don't know enough about that case to know if it falls into this group.
Yeah, if it falls into the category. We're going to be hearing that. I think anybody with a brain in their head could have predicted that once the mass rollout of a new medication that did not exist 6 months ago began, we were going to hear stories like this. So the question is, and I think, you know, the science would suggest that at baseline, you are more at risk from the virus than you are from this.
Matt Carthy?
Yeah, I think it's important to note that we're a long way away from under 30-year-olds in the general population being vaccinated, north or south, as it happens, although they're much closer to that point in the north. I think the very fact that we're aware of this potential side effect is a sign that the public health authorities are actually doing their job, that they're informing the public of the potential downsides, but also informing people that the benefits of the vaccine far outweigh those potential difficulties. All I can say, and I think Brenda is right on this, because if the vaccination was available to me in the morning, I'd be lining up to get it. And I think most people will be of that, because I think most people trust the fact that we're being informed of the potential downsides and people can weigh up the pros and cons. And I think certainly for most people's perspective, they want to get back to their lives and they're willing to do what it takes in order to do that. And they're working on the assumption that those people who are charged with identifying the risks to these are doing their job effectively, and that the information will be made available to the public as soon as that is available.
We can't move on from the pandemic in real life, but we can in this conversation. So let's. I have a joint statement in here from the three teaching unions, which we've just got in, from the ASTI, TUI and INTO. It says, the three unions have written to the Department of Education seeking an urgent meeting with officials to discuss the concerns of teachers, including those who are pregnant or considered high risk in relation to primary, post-primary and special schools, and to explore creative solutions to guarantee our schools can remain open in the face of the ongoing pandemic. Such a meeting should include officials from other key government departments, NAIC and NEFET as well. What do you make of that, Brenda? Are the unions walking back from the threat of strike action in exchange for please vaccinate our most vulnerable members?
But I mean, their most vulnerable members were going to be vaccinated anyway. And I mean, it has been pointed out to them again and again that according to the original schedule, the one that they want reinstated, they wouldn't have been done before May anyway. And their more vulnerable members will be done before that now, possibly in the next few weeks. I mean, Philip, I think, you know, like a lot of parents, I find it staggering that such a purportedly intelligent group of people could be as dumb as they were to make the threats that they made this week. I mean, the message, apart from anything else, of threatening industrial action if we are not prioritised for the vaccine, in the face of the scientific evidence that those most at risk were the older cohort, something like 70 times more likely to die of this if you're over 60 than if you're under 30, was to say basically ignore the science. That is straight. If it doesn't suit you, that is from the Donald Trump playbook of political expediency. It does no union any credit.
Brenda Power just called the teaching unions dumb. Do you agree with her?
Well, I have to say, and Brenda talks about the scientific advice, the government were the ones who were ignoring it up until a week ago when they changed tack in relation to the prioritisation programme. And I think fundamentally the difficulty here is the commitment that was made by government to teachers and to others. And I think it's very important that we recognise this. There have been some workers across our economy and society who have been putting themselves in harm's way every day. And it hasn't just been teachers. It includes people in local supermarkets. It includes very particularly childcare professionals who I think have been ignored in a lot of
it does, and I'm not going to come up with an argument against any of those people. But the problem is that if you take that approach, well, people like me can say, well, I should be included in that group too.
Well, I'd oppose that, Philip.
Yeah, well, so would I. So would I, in fairness. Well,
the point is this, and this is the important thing. The government, though, it wasn't I or you that said that there needed to be a prioritisation programme that recognised those people who were on the front line. The government committed to doing that to these workers. They found out that they were no longer on the prioritisation programme by watching the 6-1 news. That is not a way in which you communicate.
I want to bring in the minister here. You're hoist by your own petard here, Minister. You did make that promise.
Can I just clarify something here? It was the National Immunisation Advisory Council, NIAC, who recommended to government, and this was endorsed by NEFET, that we would apply an age-based approach. This is scientific recommendation. This is not government recommending this. That's number one. And as Brenda has outlined there, many of, you know, our population, never mind the different sectors across the economy, those who are older and the most vulnerable, and indeed the most vulnerable now, many teachers have been vaccinated because they have come into that either age base or that high risk category. And it's really important that what is the objective here? The objective here is to vaccinate as many people as possible and target those who are most vulnerable. And those who are aged between 55 and 64, no matter what your job is, you are 70 times more, you've 70 times more chance of dying of COVID-19 than somebody in their 20s or early 30s. And that's what this age-based approach is. And I have within my own sector in transport, there are plenty of people on the front line. We have retail workers who are probably the only people many of us were meeting during lockdown who are, you know, at the cold face of this. And any of those who are in that older category who are at high risk, those also will be targeted quickly and first now through this age-based approach.
They are following the science. You accuse them of precisely doing the opposite, but they are following the science.
The difficulty is, when there was a prioritisation programme, government ministers were standing up in the Dáil and listening and claiming credit for that prioritisation programme.
Scientific advice changed, so government policy changed.
So the scientific advice is based on fatality rates, and all of that needs to be taken into consideration. But the vaccination programme must also take into account the potential for spread of the virus. And
absolutely,
it is clear that those people who are working and encountering people on
people
it, and the public on a daily basis have more potential of catching and passing on the virus.
Of people dying, being admitted to ICU and to be admitted to hospital. Like, I really don't think you should be in the space of giving scientific medical advice. We have to be guided by NIAC. Yes, and this is a movable situation. We have to be able to adapt with the advice that we're given, and we're being
I accept that, Philip, if I could make this point. I
more
accept,
teachers, more Gardaí, more of our retail workers, more people who are on the front line will be vaccinated more quickly with this age-based approach. We're going to have a million this month, almost next month, another million vaccinations. April, May, and June.
We know what the schedule is, Minister, increasing the supply,
and I think we'll be
in a far different place in a number of weeks. You can't, on one hand, say that you have to be led entirely by the scientific advice.
So you don't want us to follow the science?
When you're just in the last five minutes,
that's very clear.
You've just had a discussion in relation to international travel, where the government have ignored the scientific advice coming from Leffert since last May. Yes, we aren't.
We are putting in place, if we want to go back to that conversation, mandatory hotel quarantine targeting
almost a year after it was recommended. My point is, Matt, you don't want to follow.
You do not want to follow the independent scientific advice.
Obviously, the advice on this, on the scientific knowledge of this virus and the way it spreads and the people it affects is evolving. We know that. As I said, this is a virus we hadn't even heard of barely a year ago. There's a report today from NPHET saying that the transmissions or the numbers of cases arising out of the school population is minimal. Teachers are at least risk of any frontline workers. And I would be of the view that teachers have abdicated the right to describe themselves as frontline workers. Frontline workers are people who stayed at their posts, did not sit at home on their laptops wondering how safe they were going to be whenever they agreed and deigned to go back into the classrooms. Teachers are not frontline workers. Frontline workers are people in supermarkets who are dealing with morons coming in without masks and confronting them and putting the spats up on social media. Guards who are not agitating nearly as aggressively as the teachers to be bumped up the vaccination list are frontline workers. Most of them, the medical personnel have been done. But for teachers to threaten industrial action in these circumstances, I have to say, Philip, anytime I write about teachers, I am astonished by the level of anti-teacher vitriol there is out there from all sectors of society. I have never seen anything like it. Teachers are in for a land when they go back into their communities.
Teachers are not frontline workers, she says, Matt Carthy.
No, teachers are frontline workers. And I have to say, I have two teenagers that are going back to school on Monday, and I'm giddy about the prospect. And I want to make, they may not be, but I think we need to ensure that they're never pulled out of school again, because I think teachers will recognise this. I have teachers in my own family. They wanted to be in the classroom. They wanted to be teaching.
Most of them do. And yet they are represented by a union that does not reflect. I want to turn our attention now
north of the border and to Belfast. Matt Carthy, what has anybody in Sinn Féin done in the course of the last week to tell these communities and places like Lanark Way and along the Shankill Road, there is no threat to your Britishness or to the symbols that you want to fly from us? We are not going to try and take those things away from you.
I don't think the threat comes from Sinn Féin, and I don't think
they think
anybody...
It does.
Well, Sinn Féin are at the coalface of those communities and at the interfaces. Last night, it was our representatives who were on the ground clearing the barricades that were that some within the nationalist community were attempting to put up. It was Sinn Féin MPs, MLAs, councillors, community activists who were on the ground. The difficulty
we don't have the equivalent
political leadership being shown.
Yeah, I know,
but I'm not asking you
about how you policed your own community. I'm talking about what you have said to the other community to allay their fears.
Well, we engage with those communities on the ground where it actually matters. The difficulty is that those communities have been provoked by their own political leaders for their own political ends as a result of their own miscalculation. I'm talking specifically about the DUP here in relation to their position on Brexit and then their position post-Brexit, where they tried to antagonise the situation, and then where they have, I suppose, provoked a reaction to the protocol, which was the absolutely natural position that was going to be in place. Now, part of the difficulty from their perspective was that they were lied to by Boris Johnson and his cohorts. They were told that there was a mechanism by which you could avoid a border in Ireland, where you could withdraw from the European Union single market and yet have unfettered
This is verging on whataboutery. What matters now is what happens next. Hildegard Nocton, what's the Irish government done to allay the fears and concerns of people in these communities that unification is very high on the agenda of the Irish government?
Yes, so we've had 7 consecutive nights of violence now in the north, and it is really, really concerning. I know that the Prime Minister Boris Johnson has spoken to the Taoiseach, and they both issued a joint statement calling for calm and stating that the way forward is through dialogue and through the working the institutions of the Good Friday Agreement. You know, over the last few days, I've been that those famous words from George Santayana, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So much work has happened over the last number of decades from the grassroots up at political level, at community level, in order to ensure that we have peace on this island. And it's really important that, you know, leaders from all sides now step up to the mark and,
Is it time to take unification off the agenda until things calm down?
I think it's really important that we have dialogue and that all the political leaders step up to the mark now. I know there's a lot of work happening within the community
up there as well.
I think what we need to do is to ensure that all groups and all parties and community leaders try to defuse the situation. That is the number one.
All right, Minister Hildegard Nocton, thank you very much. And Brenda Power and Matt Carthy as well. I'm going to have to take our final break.
Today with Clareburn. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.